The views and opinions expressed by guests on the TWBC podcast are solely those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views of nor constitute an endorsement by the host, TWBC, or the advertisers.
National championships, Confederation championships, World championships, major professional events. For over three decades, he has been there for many of the sport's greatest moments. And now he brings you even closer to the movers and shakers in the world of high echelon tournament water skiing. From the founder and creator of the Water Ski Broadcasting Company comes the TWBC Podcast. And now here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
And yes, greetings one and all, salutations to all that have come in and gotten ready to listen to this episode of the TWBC podcast. I am the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot, and here is a rather special episode. In fact, they're all rather special, if we're being honest, but this especially so because this is a skier who comes to us out of Belarus. She is the current Water Ski Pro Tour Women's Jump Champion for that season-long title, and also a multiple-time world champion in the field of cable tournament water skiing. It's Hanna Strotz over out of Belarus. How are you doing?
Hi, Tony. I'm good. Thank you for inviting me to your podcast. This is a big challenge for me, you know, so I hope it will be interesting.
And I do have to admit, I have been wanting to do this podcast for quite a while, given your status amongst the world's elite, but we were kind of waiting a little bit for your English to actually get to a certain level to where you can answer questions with something other than a yes or a no, and just try and expand upon your answers, you know. So, I mean, there's that to consider as well. So how much of a challenge has that been really for you within the last few seasons? Because when you first came to the United States, or at least immersed yourself in an all English speaking environment, how hard was it to try and, you know, get to where you were to where you are now?
I came to States twice to a ski school, to work in a ski school, and I didn't really know English, but they were Japanese, you know, and I still could work there. And I really started learning English when I decided that I will go to the school here, to Monroe. Mm-hmm. So I studied it really hard for the test, and then my English improved a lot, and then during the school for 2 years, it's been improving because I had to study in English, you know, attend classes, communicate and stuff. And now I'm finished school. I here at Venice and I just ski, and I don't really need to improve my English anymore. And I kind of got lazy about it. Mm-hmm. So I'm just at that level that I can communicate on a regular basis, and I'm just lazy, you know, to improve.
No, but I mean, you pick a little bit of nuances and, you know, colloquialisms and that kind of stuff, you know. So, yeah, almost forgotten about the fact that you actually ski collegiately for at least one or two seasons.
2 years, yes.
2 years. So to get on ULM's program, you know, you had to have a certain proficiency in English. You had to take the TOEFL test, didn't you, to be able to sign up for any of the classes, right?
Yes, I did IELTS. It's another test. And I did my master's degree there, so I had to do another test with math and English to be able to get into master's degree. I don't know how I did it, but somehow, like, my math score was higher and my English score was lower, but overall it was enough to make it to the Masters. I don't know how, like, but I'm glad it worked out.
It didn't surprise me that your maths score would have been higher than English, because, I mean, there is an awful lot of emphasis placed upon maths teaching, especially among the Slavic nations, of which Belarus, Ukraine,
and
Russia.
It was interesting because I finished school and then I went to the university back home for 4 years, and I started physical education, so there was no math classes. And I finished it after 4 years. I decided that I will go to Monroe for a master's, and then I found out I have to take math. And then I just took, I think, 2 months to get ready, and it was enough for me. You know, like, I wasn't in a math field, I didn't take classes, and then I still was able to pass the test.
Yeah, but I mean, you have to admit, I mean, like, the standard of maths teaching and the standard of, of acuity within mathematics is a lot higher and typically than the United States. You know, I mean, I do substitute teaching on various subjects, math being one of them. You know, and it kind of pains me a little bit to have to guide, you know, junior high school students, you know, through algebra 2 and algebra 3, when those subjects, you know, have already been done and forgotten about for many children in Belarus. You know, that you're studying geometry and trigonometry before you head to college, right?
I mean, I can say that we have a good school education, and we have high scores to apply to the universities. Like, you have to study those tests. We have a good base for, like, children, like, all school, but I can't say that about the universities.
Tell us a little bit about your university study. I mean, because you spent 2 years at Monroe, but you went through your entire undergraduate studies in Belarus. So which specific school in Belarus was it?
It was a university in my city.
Novopolitsk?
Yes, Novopolitsk. I went there just because it was convenient. It's a small city. You can get anywhere in, like, 20 minutes. So it was very convenient and comfortable in terms of getting education and skiing and training at the same time. And also, like, I was thinking about coming to the States to study for quite a while before, when I was, like, in high school, but then I didn't have enough money, and I think I was still, like, small in my brain. Like, I wasn't grown up, I didn't know how everything works, and an injury happened. I broke my ankle. When was it? It's like last year of high school or the first year of the university. But anyway, so I had to do a surgery on it in Germany because our doctors couldn't fix it. They didn't know how to fix it. So it took me a year to, like, get back in sport. And actually, the doctor that did my surgery, he said, like, I don't know, like, I will fix it, but I'm not sure you will be able to do any sports.
Wow.
Like, it will be fine for, like, regular living, but I'm not sure, like, I will do my best, but then, like, no guarantee.
Well, that must have been a little bit unsettling, you know, to have gotten that kind of response from someone in Germany that's operated on your ankle. But you persevered enough anyway. You got back to Novopolitsk. I mean, in that world famous training program that they have there, you know, where you trick in the swimming pool during the winter, you know. Tell us a little bit about that, because that's a little bit of a story that I didn't know about you when we started this interview.
Yes. No, so that's why I like stayed in my city to go to the university because of the ankle, and I didn't know if I will be able to ski at all, you know, and I just started university. Well, about the our ski program, you know, here in the States, people with money can go buy a boat, mm-hmm. buy a ski, and just go out and ski with the family and stuff. Well, our country is not that...
Not that well off, no.
Yes, it's pretty poor. So, like...
Unless you happen to...
We can't just go and buy a boat, you know, and it's really hard to even transport a boat. You have to pay so much taxes.
Yeah.
We have two clubs in the country, in Minsk and in Novopolsk, mm-hmm. and they are funded by government, by the Ministry of Sport.
Uh-huh.
So back home, like any sports that we have, they are funded from Ministry of Sport.
Uh-huh.
So I will talk about my club. Every year, they invite kids to come and try water skiing.
Mm-hmm.
So parent, like at the age of like 6, 7, parents send their kids to the school, and let's say it's 100 kids.
Wow.
And then, yeah, some of them go to learn how to swim first, and then they try to
skiing.
Ski.
Yeah.
So it all starts from the swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 50-meter swimming pool.
Olympic length.
Yes. And we always start on 2 trick skis.
Mm-hmm.
And then... What is the advantage of this program? So let's say 100 people comes, and then a coach comes and looks at all the kids, and then he just chooses 10 the best ones of all of them.
And then progresses to the next stage, you know, and learning how to do the basic tricks and learning how to do the basic spins,
yeah.
Right?
But like you see, there is a lot of opportunities to pick the best ones, mm-hmm. with a talent, and so he picks a group, let's say like my coach, he picks a group and then he works with them, but you have to attend, like there is a schedule, you have to attend all the practices, you have to improve, and that's how you stay in there. Like if you don't attend, if you're lazy, if you don't get it serious and you don't improve, you get kicked out.
Yeah.
So that's how we get better, I guess.
Yeah, because I mean that's one of the first things I would have asked you about, how you actually get skiing in Belarus, you know, because it's totally different in the United States. I mean, it's mostly family based in the United States, to where the kids are part of the family, mm-hmm. they learn how to ski, they improve, and they might get good enough to be in a tournament, they'll get noticed and train on from there. It's a lot different in Belarus, you know. So the pool program, it's always kind of intrigued me a little bit, because, you know, from the point of view of learning how to trick, you know, because one of the most difficult things that anyone can do within water skiing is actually to learn your basic stance in tricking and learn how to pull in relation to the rope and the handle, and not lean back and lean mm-hmm. forward and lean to the side and lean that kind of stuff. In Belarus, in that tricking program, you learn your stance, the correct stance, very, very early, being straight up and down and not using too much of your shoulders or your hips to actually make the ski turn. You know, you learn how to keep your weight mm-hmm. centered over the ski. Is that a pretty accurate assessment?
Yeah, I think it's just the way our coach taught us. Like, it's so easy in the swimming pool. You can, like, it's a 50 meters, so you can do, like, 25 rides, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And you fall and you get out, and then the next gear goes. And it's very fast, and you can do one trick repeat it for like 10 times, and it's so he just makes us do it to a perfection of like how he thinks it's perfect, you know. But it's a really good way to put kids on a
path to success,
on like trick skis, on like how to teach them ski. And it's also cheap, like it's electrical.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, we have winter, so there is no other way train.
Yeah, because I mean, the lakes in Belarus in the winter are only good for ice fishing at that time. Yes.
And like they always pick kids in the swimming pool, and then if you do well, then summer comes, and then you go to the lake, and the best ones they try to ski on jump skis, try to ride a slalom ski, and then if you are chosen to go to the lake, then it means you're good, and then you will be a water skier.
How did that feel, you know, being selected to go to the lake?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I felt. I just realize it now how it works, you know. For me, it was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to the lake to ski.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little simpler over here in the United States, because, I mean, the lake is about the only way you can do skiing. I mean, I haven't seen any programs to where you do a 50-meter pool type thing in the United States, but we'll leave that for a little bit. Kind of describe a little bit what your first experience was riding the slalom ski for the first time, you know, because, I mean, most people here, that's their entrance into water skiing, being able to get up on two, then on the slalom ski, and then way, way down the road, then they think about putting the trick ski on. It's different in Belarus.
I don't actually remember how I got on slalom ski.
You probably thought that this is fast.
I think, no, I'm sure we start on two skis and then we drop one, you know, for the slalom ski. Yeah, that's what we do. From my childhood memories, I just remember that I always fell in tricks. Like, I get up, like, 30 seconds, I try, fall. I always, like, I couldn't trick. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I was picked. I had good slalom, and I was good in jumping, and the tricks were horrible. Like,
you had to really work hard to get to where you wanted to be in tricks.
Yeah, I just remember I was always in the water, not on the water. Like, I get up, try, fall, and I hated it. And it was cold, you know. You sit in the water and you start freezing.
Yeah, because even summers in Belarus are extremely cold.
Yeah, you still wear a wetsuit.
Okay, so you managed to get onto the lake, you got behind the boat, but Belarus, out of probably all the nations that I know of, are exceptionally great at cable skiing. I haven't seen any pictures of a cable ski facility in Belarus, maybe... aside from that in Minsk, you know, but I mean...
We have one cable, which is in Minsk.
Just one?
Yes. Right now we have a few two-way cables, but they opened just recently, like a few years ago. Yeah, just one cable.
Just one cable, and you're the Belarusians are the world cable tournament ski champions.
Yeah.
And then you compare that to Germany, which has about 20 of them.
Yeah, but you see, they still in Germany, they're mostly public for the like recreational skiers, for wakeboard.
Mm-hmm.
And they also don't get as much time as they want for like cable skiing, three event skiing. So it's not that easy, I guess, too. For me, I started cable when I was 11, I guess.
Okay.
So I've been doing it every year, but I did it for like 2 weeks a year or 3 weeks a year, and that was enough for me to learn and progress. You know, there is a correlation. The better you are, like for me, the better you are on the boat, the better you are on cable.
Okay. Okay, that's
and yeah, boat skiing helps a lot to improve in cable.
Excellent stuff. Now, everyone that I know of, anyone knows you, not so much for slalom or for tricks, but it's for your jumping. You've excelled well in the previous season, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But when did you personally realize that, you know, I've got something good here with jumping? Maybe not so much with tricks, because you said it yourself, you fail.
Mm-hmm.
But when you got on those jump skis and you started hitting the ramp and getting some decent distance, when did you have that epiphany and like saying, okay, well, I've got something here?
You know, it happened when I was 12, I guess, or 13. But like, that was the first time I went to Europeans under 14.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, and I think I won jump, or I was second. And well, at home you train as a kid and you don't see the rest of the world.
Okay.
The lake is your world, you know, and you see the people that you train with, and you don't know any international skiers, and you don't know what level they are, and you don't realize what level you are, you know?
You had no idea how competitive you were.
Yes. So I went to Europeans under 14 and I won there. And I went next year again under 14 and I won again. And then I just keep like placing, like first, second. I guess I was first or second. I don't think I was third. Under 14, under 17, 21, and then it's like always been that I've been placing in jumping.
Who were you competing against when you started winning in like age 14, age 15? Anyone we know of?
Janina was there.
Janina was there.
And then another French girl. And then Charlotte Wharton was there.
Charlotte Wharton?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would love to have seen the looks on their faces when this like this fresh-eyed skier out of Belarus comes in and like beats them all. You know, where does this Strelcova come from? You know, I mean,
you know, when I had this feeling when we had Worlds under 21 in Spain.
Mm-hmm. That's the same, yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Yes. So I still didn't, like, I knew European skiers like Janina, you know, like some French skiers, mm-hmm. like Czech, Belarus. I didn't know girls from the United States.
Mm.
So the main competitor was Taryn Grant.
Yes.
So I think my best score was like 48-49 at that time, and she already jumped 51. But I was, you know, like, I was at the lake training, and my coach was encouraging me, yeah, we will get it, you know. But I look at the score, and I'm like, how? Like, it's like 3 or 4 meters difference. And he told me, yeah, but you know, like, we train here in not very, like, in not perfect conditions. And in the United States, everything's the best, you know?
Yeah.
So the results are better, like, themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So when you meet them in the same site, at the same time, you know, same conditions, you will beat them. And I'm like, okay, I was hesitating until last minute, you know, but I got there and I won Taryn by 10 centimeters and I jumped my PB.
Oh, nice.
That was insane.
What kind of distance was it? Over 50 meters?
51 and 1, something like
51.
That.
51.1 meters, you know,
yes.
Which must have been a personal. Yeah, you
yeah,
said
it
your
was
personal.
Best, yes.
It was your personal best at that time. So I mean, that must have been.
Yeah. And that's what I would like to say, that how it's different right now, that I train here and I know everybody, and I see how they ski, how they train, and you know, I see who they are. And back home, you didn't have those thoughts. You didn't worry about others. You were concentrating on yourself. to do your best, you know?
Okay, do you still wish you had that kind of isolation from the competitors? I mean, because it served you pretty well there in the world under 21s.
Yeah, I don't know, but I was still a kid and there was no other option, you know.
There was either that or nothing, you know. So I mean that must have been a rather amusing setup there for that event. Obviously, we talked about tricks, talked about your jumping. Haven't really touched upon slalom skiing, which is probably out of the three events your weakest event. Have you made any strides to try and seriously improve your slalom at all, to try and bring you up a little bit higher in overall?
Yes. I guess since last year, yeah, I've been working on changing my technique, because Jay says I'm strong and I can be good in slalom. I just need little things to change, you know, in my technique. So I feel better right now. I just need more time and practice and tournament practice to let it raise, kind of, you know?
Yeah, because you ski here over at Bennett's, and you know what the bar is so far as slalom skiing is concerned. I mean, because you hear it every single weekend, you see and hear skiers like Regina and Whitney and all those skiers getting into 10.75 meters, and that's a pretty tough ask for any skier, but for an overall skier such as yourself, certainly very, very tough to achieve. But
I mean, I like to slalom, mm-hmm. So it's not like, oh, I have to do it for overall, you know. I like it itself. So I hope I will be better.
Okay.
It's just when I was taught how to slalom ski, you know, our coaches, they were back home, and they were, at that time, there were no...
No one that was specializing in some of the newer techniques.
There were no videos, no footage on the internet. It wasn't that popular as nowadays. You know, you go online and you find the video and you can learn from it. So back in the day, there was nothing. So they taught us how they thought it should be. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't quite right. So now I had to relearn little things to mm-hmm. now to get better and improve, you know.
I'm sure that the skiers and the coaches over there in Belarus would probably be thankful for TWBC for some of the footage that comes through. I mean, you have access to YouTube in Belarus, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. I mean,
no, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's so easy right now, and you can look so many videos of different techniques and compare and learn, you know. They didn't have it back then, and...
Yeah, but yet, even though you didn't have it back then, you're still able to ski better than average in slalom and pack quite a punch so far as the overall is concerned.
Yeah, and I may say that I always placed in... Well, I always placed in jump, and the other medal, it was either trick or overall.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, obviously a lot of work to do with slalom to try and bring that on a par with tricking and jumping. But let's go a little bit to last year, because, I mean, you won several titles, the Masters, you won King of Darkness, I think you won quite a few others, but let's home in upon the cable skiing a little bit, because you won, what was it, you actually won the slalom, I believe?
I was third
in slalom, and
won tricks, and then I got second in jump
and first overall.
First overall, yes.
Okay, so I mean, I'm guessing a lot of people that are listening to this are probably more edged towards tournament water skiing, but tell me a little bit about the struggles and the challenges that it takes for a competitor such as yourself to to switch from tournament skiing behind the boat, then to cable, and then less than a week later before the next competition, switching back. And with that, we'll take a break from the interview and conclude this as part one of a two-part interview with Hannah Strolzerver. We certainly thank her very much for those insights that she was kind enough to share with us in this part one. And be sure to catch part two next week for the continuation of the Hannah Strolzerver interview here on the TWBC podcast. So until then, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.